The lesson is a man who is 38 years old, like Enzo. It's a great, great talented person, an ex-Formula One champion and a personality. He cannot beat someone who is 23 years old and who want to win Le Mans. The young one will be always braver in a way, and you don't have a single chance.
Here is Alte Schule, die goldene Ära des Automobils.
Mein Name ist Carsten Arndt und ich heiße euch herzlich willkommen zum Original, wenn es um die Menschen aus der goldenen Ära des Automobils geht. Und heute habe ich euch einen ganz besonderen Vertreter aus dieser Zeit an Land gezogen. Und nicht nur wegen meines Gastes ist es eine ganz besondere Folge geworden. Ich habe schon zahlreiche Mails von euch bekommen mit der Frage, ob ich eigentlich auch ausländische Gäste interviewen würde. Und ich habe immer geantwortet, dass ich mir das schon durchaus vorstellen kann. Aber solange da noch so viele besondere Köpfe hinter der deutschsprachigen Autoindustrie sind, die viel erlebt und einiges zu erzählen haben, sah ich nicht zu die Veranlassung. Und da müsste es schon ein ganz besonderer Vertreter sein. Lange Rede, kurzer Sinn. Mein heutiges Interview ist auf Englisch und ich habe lange überlegt, ob ich es für euch übersetze, aber dann geht so viel Charakter verloren und ich glaube, er ist auch so zu verstehen. Liebe Freunde und Fans der alten Schule, hier ist er für euch. Die Legende Jackie X.
I think initially you did want to start a career as a race car driver.
Initially, when you're young, you never know where you're going to end at the end.
Yes.
But in my childhood, yes, I would have loved to definitely to have been a gardener or a gamekeeper. Or I love nature. I was often on my own, I love the silence of the nature and all these things. And at the end, I never did really what I wanted.
So it was exactly the opposite of what you did.
Yeah, yeah.
If you close your eyes and think about your incredible career, which picture comes to your mind?
The first picture when you realize what you have done in that unexpected job I did most of my life, is to appreciate to have survived from a competition where you live permanently a risk. And definitely I survived 32 seasons of sport, including, as you said, motorcycle, cars, off-road racing, endurance racing, Formula One. Even Can-Am racing, Formula 2, I did almost everything. But at the age of 75, I definitely was lucky to survive an extremely long career with a very high mileage of high speed performance without having had major accident. Yes, it was limit sometimes, definitely, but I had a good guardian angel.
Do you think it was luck sometimes?
I definitely believe in luck because the talent doesn't solve that sort of problem. Yes, I think I've been extremely lucky, but probably even better than that, I had the chance to be surrounded by very talented mechanics and engineers, and those people make the success of the drivers with giving them the right tool to be a winner and to win races. So the drivers are the mirrors of those who prepare and make and run these cars, definitely. And globally in life, it's always like that. It's always, it's never an individual who does the job. It's a group of people who make it possible.
So I've had a few guests in my podcast who have played a role in your career. Guys like Roland Kussmaul, Norbert Singer, Eckhard Schimpf, and they always mention your name when we talk about the most complete driver. You were fast, you didn't destroy the cars, you were technically perfect, you knew the whole game. What's your point of view about that concerning your strengths?
Definitely, you need a certain talent for certain things, and that was my case. But you are surrounded by a lot of in motor racing, anyhow, and everywhere today, because the competition for a job or an activity is very high. You need to be. There are plenty of talented people around you, but what makes the difference? Definitely, it's. Those guys who are with you and all share the same passion, and they do the job 100%.
So I think Ken Turrell is one of the guys who are most important for you.
Is it clear? I think it's easy to talk about the destiny when the pad has been done and you are at the end of your life in a way. Yes, we are talking about things or belong to the past. But for everyone, and once again, it's not only in motor racing, we all have a story. You have a story, many people have different stories and different kind of job. But you realize quickly that there are a number of people who may change your life. A teacher with a book, a teacher with a sentence, to meet someone who give you another direction or the possibility of another direction. And definitely Ken Turrell was one part of it. And probably in my life, 6 or 7 people really had a precious decision to take different turns in my life. But I had an happy life, but don't believe that in this job there are only happiness. There are also very sad moments, and that you never recover from, sentimentally or because you don't have only the glory and the spotlights into it. There is also some shade and. You have to learn to live with it. So, but globally, yes, it was fantastic. And Ken Turrell really played an important role into it.
And a sad moment for you was your first Formula One victory in a Ferrari, your big dream, when your friend Joe Schlesser died.
No, it was same race. Yes, that's Joe Schlesser. You are right. But those things were part of the racing life in those days, and it's still part of it today. Except that the difference between the 70s or the end of the 60s with modern racing is that safety has been really focused on by a number of people, and the tracks are safe, the car is safer. And luckily, we don't live that sort of situation. But in those days, you start a race, you finish a race, whatever was happening, and it was part of it. Also, although it's extremely hard to live, the race still goes on, and life goes on as well.
How was it for your family? Your father was a motor journalist, and did they support you, or were they scared?
Well, they were... honestly, they didn't know what to do with me. My teachers were always saying that I was very intelligent but very lazy. And my parents believed it for a while, but at the end they realized I was not really made for school, and I was so. I used them to promise a lot of things that I never did, and I received a lot of gift with the promise to do better the year after and so on. But I never did that. But I had the chance to be gifted with a motorcycle and a lot of other different things. To say they were happy about racing, I cannot say that, because I think this is the worst thing that may happen to parents, is to leave that the sport and the motorsport in those days, because they knew what you didn't think about when you are driving, and when you are young, it's about dying. But as you mentioned, Schlesser and many others in that era, there were a lot of people dying in motor racing. So their life was not very nice, really.
Okay, let's get back to the beginning. You started racing with a BMW 700, I think.
Yes, I start with a BMW 700 coupe with 44 horsepower, and that was the start, really. Since then, every year I had the chance to drive a faster and a bigger car. And I would say between after 5 years, like doing university, I had an offer to drive a Formula One, and I was in Formula One. But the specificity of that era is that everyone drives all sorts of cars. I'm not the only one aware driving all sorts of cars. All of us were driving endurance racing, Formula 2, Can-Am. We did everything at the same time, and it was common in those days. Today, it doesn't exist anymore because if you have a deal with a team, you sign exclusively for the deal, and if you want to do something else, it's just not possible. But we were privileged to do all sorts of racing.
And you had a huge crash with this BMW, which made people aware of you because it was caught on tape, which wasn't usual during that time. And so you became very famous in Budapest.
Well, famous, I don't know. I was famous at the time to have crashed the car and without hurting myself. But that doesn't look at the time as a promise to become a professional driver. But with few crashes in the early days, you learn where... faster than others where the limit is.
All right. And then there was one race on the Nürburgring. Ken Tyrrell gave you a Formula 2 for a race, what actually was meant to be a Formula 1 race, but you were quicker in this Formula 2 than most of the rest.
Yes, the car was doing well, although a single-seater is not made to fly and jump over the Nürburgring. But... I've known the Nürburgring extremely well, and also I believe it's much easier to drive a Formula 2 on the Nürburgring than a Formula 1 car. But I was able to have a certain speed. Clearly, on the other side, driving Formula 2, I was really faster than everyone. But the fact that I spent two times the previous year, the 86 hours of the Nürburgring. Oh, it's a race, Olas, as it says, more 3.5 days. Two drivers, oh, it's a regularity, non-stop race. At least you learn the track very well and you know where you go. So I did that with a Cortina Lotus and a Ford Mustang, and... So when I came here, I didn't have to learn the race course anymore because it was done. I could do it with closed eyes.
Oh yes, it was called Marathon de la Route.
The Marathon de la Route, yes.
This incredible race for two drivers.
Yes.
Just two drivers shared the car.
I was doing the day and my co-driver, who is a rally driver, was doing the night. I was doing, 14 hours during the day, and my teammate was doing the rest by night because I didn't like the night so much. I like to sleep during the night.
But I think it changed later when you celebrated your great successes in Le Mans.
No, when I say I don't like the night, I drive well in the night. But I think it's difficult to last in the Marathon de la Route. 10 hours non-stop by night at an average speed, it's easy to get asleep. So I let that to the rally driver, who is used to it.
How did you keep yourself fit in the early years? Was it only by driving races?
Only driving, because we raced a lot in these days. Almost every weekend, different categories, different type of races, so... honestly, the physical preparation was not part of the job in those days. It's only because with the time we have realized that how important it is to be clearly fit and scientifically prepared to do competition. That is changed. Modern racing, you have really have to be an athlete. Probably also 50 years ago. But the number of competition, we were not training on a simulator. It was real training, real racing. So we were basically fit and young.
Okay. I talked to Hans Hermann about this legendary Le Mans race in 1969. He drove a Porsche 908, and it was the first Le Mans race for the 917. And you drove the Ford GT40, the Grandma. It was an old car for racing, but nevertheless, you won the race. Can you describe it from your point of view?
That win became a legend race because, first of all, I didn't run to my car, because running to my car would have mean I would have done more than one stint without seat belts. And at Le Mans, at high speed, you compete, but you put your seat belts on. So I thought on 24 hours, there'll be plenty of time to catch up. We were not supposed to win either, because they were a much faster car than us. But at the end, we lived the incredible situation to do the last 3 hours in common without separate ourselves for more than a few seconds. We had to refuel at the same time, change the tires at the same time, change the pad at the same time. So it happened that Porsche decided to put Hans Hermann in the car to finish the race. But the lesson is a man who is 30 years old, or 38 years old, like Anso, is a great, great talented person, an ex-Formula One champion and a personality. He cannot beat someone who is 23 years old and who want to win Le Mans. You are always the young one who will be always braver in a way, and you don't have a single chance. And but Hans is a great talented person, and in a way I feel sorry for him that it happened with him, because still today everybody speak to him and saying, oh, did you finish second at Le Mans? And he doesn't deserve that. He's a real nice person. He's a nice person, but he was beaten, and Porsche missed their first victory at Le Mans by 120 meters.
Yes, but next year he came back and he won the race.
Well, next year they won. Next year they won with the 917 with Richard Atwood, and they started their series of 19 wins at Le Mans.
And it was his last race.
Yeah.
What was your favorite race car over all those years?
I always drove very nice car. The only the most difficult moment probably was when I drove for Lotus. You remember the car who didn't suit you well, and that was the Lotus. But beside that, almost every car I drove was a winning car.
Yeah, maybe because you drove it.
No, don't believe that. Don't believe that you drive a winning car because you have the ability to do so. But a winning car, it's made by a group of people that you never see. Engineers, mechanics, they all together build up a winning car. And when they give you the right tool, it's reasonably easy to win.
But I think they sometimes need the motivation from a special driver.
Well, sometimes in special occasion you can do the difference. But basically, I think the driver represents 15% of the challenge, and they represent 85% of the challenge, those people. So, you see, you get the glory, but normally the people who have to get the glory to build up a winning car, you never see them, and they don't get anything except the satisfaction, intellectual satisfaction, to have done well.
Also, it's nice what you said. Hopefully, young driver may listen to it.
Well, because when you're young, you're looking to win and you don't care about these things. But when you grow, you care and you realize that in life, you never do anything alone.
By the way, how could you concentrate on racing when all those girls were waiting for you in the pit?
There were never any girls waiting.
No?
You know, when you have the passion, it's only for cars.
Hans Hermann's story sounded different.
Really? I didn't know he was like that. I will speak to him next time and say, You were, Hans, I met someone who said you were a womanizer.
Yeah, some say you were too.
Don't believe what the people say. Only believe what you see.
When we met last year, I told you people tell me their best stories. But you insisted and said they will not tell their best stories.
No, no, you will never hear the most interesting stories, that for sure.
I'm doing a weekly talk about the history of motorsports together with Rainer Braun. You might remember him.
I know Rainer from the early days. He's retired now.
Yes, officially he's retired, but he's still commenting races and writing for magazines and doing the talk with me together. I'm really thankful.
Okay, that's nice to hear. Nice to hear. He's around.
Yes.
I've known them in 1970. Before he married, I think 69 maybe at Hockenheim.
Oh yes, I see you have a memory like Rainer Braun himself.
Yeah, because it was a time where you could have not partying, but you could have in the evening the Saturday dinner with the journalists and everything. It was normal. Nobody was in bed at 8 o'clock. I remember that Lewis Hamilton, I saw Hamilton late in the evening before practice and so on. And he said, I go out because otherwise I can't sleep and I am in bed and I can't find a sleep. And finally, it's even worse for me. So he moves around.
So he keeps the old times alive and he's an incredible driver.
Yeah, he's an incredible driver. Yeah.
But in my last talk with Rainer Braun, we talked about Hockenheim 1970. The Nürburgring was too dangerous, and so they switched to Hockenheim.
We went to Hockenheim. We had a race. We had a good race with Jochen.
Jochen Rindt and you duelled, and the rest was far behind.
Yes.
How do you remember this race?
Well, it was a race with the a gentleman aspect, because at the time, Hockenheim was a very high-speed track where there was a lot of slipstreaming. When we realized we couldn't go away from each other, we considered that most of the lap we have to live together. So as we were leading once, there were leading changes at least once a lap. We could say, I wait for you on the right side or the left side, indicating, because with the slipstream, you cannot do anything against it. And I know the people remember that race well, because it was exciting. And it's all about racing. It's not knowing who is going to win until the last lap. When the races are comfortable, you win without glory.
It was amazing.
Yeah, it was. It's one of the races, one of the competitive race, definitely.
Like Le Mans 69.
Like Le Mans 69 or Le Mans 77.
Yes, with Jürgen Barth.
They are always the scenario of the race change every weekend. Sometimes it's exciting, sometimes it's less exciting, but at the end I spend, doing including motorcycle, I did 32 seasons of sport at high level, because even when I was on motorcycle, I was a works driver for Zündapp. It doesn't exist anymore, the motorcycle Zündapp, but I did some enduro and trial. I also could have become a driver for Suzuki in Grand Prix with the 50cc, and then So I did 32 seasons altogether, so including Le Mans, Dakar, and many other things. So it's a very high mileage of pure racing. And at the end, yes, I am a survivor.
Yes, you are. And we have to talk about another dangerous race, Paris-Dakar. Yeah. Roland Kussmaul told me that you once came to Porsche after some years when you drove Citroën. How did it start?
It started because it's a detail. I saw it on TV and I said that's something we have to try to do and so on. So when I was driving long distance at Porsche, they knew that I was doing the Paris-Dakar and they were following it too. But the decision was made because I saw the East African Safari 911 running at Vaisak. And I said to myself, with that car, with a two-wheel drive car, set as it is, it's a car you could win the Paris-Dakar at the time. And when I made the proposal, although Porsche financially was not really in good shape in those days, and they decided to do it, but only for one reason. It's because they were developing the four-wheel drive transmission. And they felt it was an opportunity to test. Porsche always do race with, in the background, a development purpose. So I didn't know they were doing it, and they did it because so they decided to build the car. But I had to run the team, and I entered the car. It's not Porsche who entered the car officially. It's Jackie Hicks entered the cars and organized, because I knew how it was working, the trucks and the team and the sponsor.
And it was a small team, 15 or something people.
Well, I think we were 18 people.
18?
Including the teams themselves. That means I can easily count three person in the truck multiplied by two, that's six. Three cars, that's 12. Six in the airplane as mechanics, that's 18. Yeah, but, and we were considered as a real works team at the time. They say, but nobody gave us any chance to win the Dakar. And I had a good feeling to choose René Metz for his experience of the Dakar into it. And we won two times out of three times, so it's real success. And that car, the 959, and the very first one, the 911, became iconic for Porsche. Because there is one important detail in those days. The 911 was not supposed to be produced anymore in the close future. And still today, the 911 is in production.
It is, and there was a 911 called Jackie X.
There is a 911 limited edition of 75 cars who have been produced and sold immediately, even before the press announcement.
Do you have one?
I have one.
Only one? Or
no, I have only one. One, it's enough.
Are you having other special cars in your private collection?
No, I'm not a collector.
Okay.
At all. I'm not a collector, and I'm not so much concerned by the past. I'm more interested on what is remaining than the past.
But one last question about the past. In my next talk to Rainer Braun, we are talking about Stefan Bellof's death in Spa, which was 35 years ago now. So you
I don't
really
have to speak about that anymore for a very simple reason that everything has been said already and clearly said. But it will remain forever extremely sad for such a misunderstanding or such a, an attempt. It remained very sad that it cost his life because it was the promising Formula One driver, and he was extremely talented, very talented. And there were so much hope on him for the future of German motor racing in Formula One, and he could have been a real challenge for Ayrton Senna. So it doesn't fact that it doesn't stop the reality that you can only be sad of these moments.
Okay. We are here at the Nürburgring for the Oldtimer Grand Prix, and Uwe Meissner, who introduced us to each other, prepared the old Formula One Ferrari that you will drive.
Yes.
How is it for you to sit in your old car again?
It's very special. Everybody can understand how special it is because it put you back 48 years ago, and with such a long time, it's hard to believe that you did these things. It's hard for me to understand that in 69 and 72 I won the German Grand Prix on the most difficult race course. But it's an old lady. It's an old car, and it's a fragility too, and it's fantastic to still have it. And it's a human story, and I think the success of classic car racing, the major part is it's human. Usually when you're not in the COVID situation, you can meet the collectors, you can hear the cars, you can touch them. Everybody share the same passion, and owner, collector, museum having BMW or Porsche, they can bring some cars. And Uwe in particular is, well, his path goes to rebuilding Formula One or Ferraris, and definitely when you speak about cars and customer or collector at Ferrari, he plays a key role into it, and he has been able to bring, I think, 11 cars Ferrari here. And considering the situation, COVID situation and traveling situation, it's quite a goal, yes.
Oh, it's so amazing. Yesterday I've been in the pit downstairs, and when they ran all those engines, the sound is incredible.
Yeah, no, it is definitely. Yes, you can feel the vibration of the engine, and you're not usually taken away from the action. Amateurs or sport usually are connected, and that's the reason why these type of races are so successful at the moment, because at the same time it's human and there is a certain freedom usually.
How is it for you to sit in the car? Do you think about the past, or is it just concentrate on driving the present car?
Well, the feelings and the reaction haven't changed. It's like doing bicycle in a way. When you sat in a car like that, automatically the car has the same smell because cars have a smell. And the automatism are there as well. Of course, you don't go at the same speed because you have to respect. You have to respect it's an old car. When you have an engine problem, you have a big problem to rebuild an engine, and every part has been to be redesigned, rebuilt because you don't by hand, because you don't find any parts for it. And so it's really, the idea is to show the people these cars and to let them hear the noise of the superb noise of a flat 12 or V12 engine.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
It is.
Okay, so we come to my last question. If the world runs out of fuel and they send you the last 50 liters for you,
we'll be in big trouble, huh? We will be in really big trouble.
In which car and on which track would you burn them?
The high challenge of Spa, old track, was exceptionally fast, and the Nürburgring will be the place to go definitely. And also the advice, and it's done by the people. If you like motor racing, do one lap. Even if you have more than 50 liters of fuel, do at least one lap in your life on the Nürburgring, because it is very, very, very special.
Okay. And in which car?
That I don't care.
Jackie X, it was a great pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
So. Das war Jackie X. Mein Gott, allein schon dieser Name, oder? An dieser Stelle nochmal vielen Dank an Uwe Meissner von Modena Motorsport, der uns beim AVD Ultima Grand Prix dieses Jahr am Nürburgring bekannt gemacht hat und mit dem ich auf meinem Alte Schule YouTube-Kanal übrigens ein Interview über die alten Formel 1 Ferraris, die er dabei gehabt hat, geführt habe. Und in dem Talk geht es auch nochmal um Gerhard Berger und warum die Besitzer der alten Formel 1 Ferraris immer so zögerlich sind, ihn mit seinen alten Fahrzeugen fahren zu lassen. Was er dazu sagt, erfahrt ihr hier auch demnächst, denn Gerhard Berger wird einer meiner kommenden Gäste sein, auf den ihr euch schon mal freuen könnt. Auf YouTube findet ihr übrigens noch weitere Videos vom Oldtimer Grand Prix und auf meinem Facebook- und Instagram-Kanal findet ihr außerdem Fotos von Jackie X und den fantastischen Autos, die er so bewegt hat. So, bis zur nächsten Woche, alles Gute und bleibt gesund.
Infos, Bilder und alles Wissenswerte unter der Internetadresse www.alte-schule-podcast.de.